A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The average workshop has about 14 half-empty spray cans and 3 bottles of something labeled all-purpose lubricant that all do completely different things, and nobody can remember which is which. Daniel sent us this one. Tier 11 of the Deep Inventory series, the chemicals. 21 maintenance chemicals every workshop touches. He wants to know what each one actually does, what it secretly destroys, which ones are just the same product in different bottles, and how to build a shelf that covers the real jobs without wasting money on marketing.
This is the tier I've been waiting for. Tools and materials are straightforward. Steel is steel, a hammer is a hammer. But the chemical shelf? That's where people light money on fire. You walk into any auto parts store, and there's an entire aisle of products that are, chemically speaking, the same 3 solvents in different colored cans.
The safety stakes are higher than people realize. You've got flammable aerosols stored next to water heaters in apartment closets, chlorinated solvents that are straight up banned in some states, and products that will etch through aluminum if you forget to wipe them off within 10 minutes.
So let's structure this in 3 families: lubricants, cleaners, and corrosion control. And we'll flag every redundancy as we go, because the real deliverable here is a shelf you can actually build, not a museum of half-empty cans.
Start with the one everyone owns and almost everyone misuses.
WD-40 is not a lubricant. It's a penetrating oil and water displacer. The WD literally stands for Water Displacement Formula 40. The mechanism is capillary action. The solvent carrier is thin enough to creep into microscopic gaps in rusted threads, and then it evaporates, leaving behind a light mineral oil film. That film is not durable enough to be a lubricant. If you spray it on a bike chain, it'll be quiet for about 3 miles and then start attracting grit like a magnet.
What's it actually for?
That's the core job. It penetrates, breaks the bond between rust and metal, and the solvent flashes off. PB Blaster does the same thing, but better. Independent testing shows about 40% less torque required to break a rusted bolt compared to WD-40. The trade-off is that PB Blaster smells like a chemical weapons convention and will damage painted surfaces and rubber seals if you leave it sitting. WD-40 is gentler but weaker. About 5 years. The propellant can leak and the solvent will eventually degrade. Flammable. Flashpoint around 45 degrees Celsius, so don't store it next to the furnace. For apartment storage, small cans are fine. Child safety is moderate. It's not something you want a kid drinking, but it's not going to cause instant organ failure either. Generic penetrating oils work adequately for light rust. For seized bolts on a car suspension, spend the extra $3 on PB Blaster.
That's penetrating oil. What about the stuff people actually should be using on hinges and locks?
General purpose lubricants, 3-in-1 oil, the WD-40 specialist line that's actually labeled as a lubricant. These are light mineral oils with anti-wear additives. They're fine for door hinges, lock cylinders, cable sheaths, but here's the thing, they damage plastics long term. The mineral oil causes swelling in polycarbonate and ABS. So if you're lubricating a plastic gear or a nylon bushing, you're slowly destroying it.
Which means for indoor use, you're better off with something else.
PTFE lubricants, Superlube, Triflow, anything with Teflon particles suspended in a carrier. These are the workhorse indoor lubricant. They're safe on plastics, they leave a dry film that doesn't attract dust, and food-grade versions exist with NSF H1 certification for incidental food contact. Shelf life is about 10 years in dry film form. Not flammable in dry film, low toxicity, apartment safe. Generic PTFE works fine for most applications.
PTFE replaces general purpose lubricant for almost everything indoors. What's the exception?
PTFE doesn't bond well to rubber. For door seals, window tracks, O-rings, anything rubber or flexible vinyl, you want silicone lubricant. Silicone won't swell rubber and it stays slick across a wide temperature range. But it has a nasty habit. If you get silicone spray on a painted surface and then try to paint over it, you'll get fisheye cratering in the finish. It's a body shop's nightmare. Also, silicone lubricant is largely redundant with dielectric grease for electrical rubber seals and with PTFE for non-rubber applications, so you really only need it for rubber and vinyl. About 5 years, safe for apartment storage. Generic works fine. It's a narrow-use product. Buy a small can and it'll last you years.
Now the greases. This is where things get thick.
White lithium grease first. This is for metal, on metal sliding surfaces. Garage door tracks, door latches, hood hinges. It's a lithium soap thickened mineral oil and it stays put where you apply it. The problem, it damages plastics. Causes cracking in polycarbonate and acrylic over time. Shelf life is only 3 to 5 years before it separates. You'll open the tube and get a squirt of oil followed by a hard plug of dried soap. Flammable in aerosol form. Generic works fine.
Bearing grease is different, how?
Bearing grease is NLGI number 2, lithium complex. It's designed for high-speed rotating elements, not sliding surfaces. Wheel bearings, electric motor bearings, anything spinning at RPM. Temperature tolerance up to about 150 degrees Celsius continuous. The critical thing is incompatibility. If you mix lithium grease with polyurea grease, the thickeners react and the grease turns to a watery mess that provides zero protection. If you're repacking a bearing and you don't know what was in there before, clean it completely or you're rolling the dice on catastrophic failure.
That's the kind of mistake you only make once.
It's expensive. Generic bearing grease is acceptable for low-speed, non-critical bearings. For high-speed or high-temperature applications, spend on Mobil 1 or Shell. Shelf life about 5 years. Low child hazard.
I've seen this stuff turn a 30-minute job into a 30-second job.
Anti-seize is a thread compound, copper, nickel, or aluminum particles suspended in grease. You put it on threaded fasteners that will be exposed to high heat or corrosion, like exhaust manifold bolts or spark plugs. It prevents galling and seizing. But here's the critical detail. Copper anti-seize on stainless steel fasteners above 300 degrees Celsius causes galvanic corrosion. The copper and stainless become a tiny battery, and the fastener corrodes faster than if you'd use nothing. For stainless, use nickel-based anti-seize.
That's the kind of specificity Daniel's asking for.
The grease base might separate, but you can stir it back together. Low child risk. Generic works for most applications.
Last in the lubricant family, cutting oil.
For drilling, tapping, and machining. It cools the tool and evacuates chips. Sulfur-based cutting oil is the traditional choice, but it stains brass and copper, turns them brown or black. Chlorinated cutting oil performs better for production work but has environmental concerns. Synthetic is the modern compromise. Shelf life about 10 years. Flammable, flash point around 150 Celsius. For hobbyist use, generic sulfur-based oil works fine. For production, chlorinated or synthetic.
That's the lubricant family. 8 products, but we've already flagged that general-purpose lubricant is mostly redundant with PTFE, and silicone is a narrow-use product you might not need if you don't work with rubber seals. We're already collapsing the list.
We haven't even hit the cleaners, where the overlap gets absurd. Let's move to contact cleaner.
That's the lubricant family. Now let's move to the cleaners, where the overlap gets even worse.
Contact cleaner is the one people most often substitute with the wrong thing. CRCQD, Deoxide T, these are fast evaporating solvents designed for electrical contacts, potentiometers, and switches. The key requirement is zero residue. You spray it on a volume knob that's gone scratchy, work the knob back and forth, and the solvent carries away oxidation and dust, then evaporates completely.
The thing people reach for instead?
Which is a mistake. Brake cleaner leaves a residue, not much, but enough to interfere with electrical contact. It also attacks certain plastics aggressively. Contact cleaner is designed to be plastic safe for most electronics housing materials, though it will damage polycarbonate and acrylic. So if you're cleaning a switch housed in clear plastic, test first.
Shelf life and safety?
About 5 years. Highly flammable, flash point around negative 20 degrees Celsius, which means it can ignite at room temperature if there's a spark. Child safety, dangerous if inhaled, and the stuff evaporates fast enough that a kid in an enclosed space could get a concentrated dose. Apartment storage, small cans only, and keep them away from any ignition source. Generic contact cleaner works for basic degreasing of contacts. Deoxy-T is the name brand step up for actual oxidation removal. It contains compounds that chemically reduce oxidation, not just wash it away.
Contact cleaner cleans contacts. What about cleaning circuit boards after soldering?
Isopropyl alcohol, 99%. This is the universal electronics cleaner. It dissolves flux residue, thermal paste, and general grime, then evaporates clean. But it has two catches. First, it damages some plastics, polystyrene and ABS in particular. If you're cleaning a circuit board mounted in a plastic housing, keep it off the housing. Second, the flash point is 12 degrees Celsius, 53 degrees Fahrenheit. That means on a warm day in a workshop without air conditioning, the vapor can ignite from a pilot light or a spark. People don't think of rubbing alcohol as a fire hazard, but at 99% concentration, it absolutely is.
That's the stuff people keep in a plastic bottle on the workbench.
Right next to the soldering iron. Shelf life is indefinite. It's just alcohol and water. It's toxic if ingested, so keep it away from kids. Apartment's safe in reasonable quantities, but store it in a cool place and keep the cap on. Generic works perfectly. There's no reason to buy name brand isopropyl alcohol.
Now, brake cleaner. You said it's not a contact cleaner. What is it actually for?
Brake cleaner is for degreasing metal brake components, rotors, calipers, drums. It's a powerful solvent that cuts through brake fluid, grease, and oil, then evaporates quickly. There are two types, chlorinated and non-chlorinated. Chlorinated brake cleaner is the one that actually works better. It's more aggressive and non-flammable. It's also banned in California under VOC regulations, and several other states have followed. Non-chlorinated is now the standard, and it's flammable. Both types will destroy plastics, rubber, and painted surfaces on contact.
It's redundant with degreaser for non-brake applications.
Brake cleaner is more aggressive and evaporates faster than a water-based degreaser. If you need something absolutely residue-free on bare metal, brake cleaner is the choice. For engine bays, tools, kitchen grease, use a degreaser. Simple Green Purple Power. These are water-based alkaline cleaners. Safe on most metals, but here's the detail that catches people. Simple Green will etch aluminum if you leave it on for more than 10 minutes. It's caustic enough to react with the surface, so if you're cleaning an aluminum engine block or motorcycle case, spray, scrub, rinse immediately.
10 minutes is not a lot of margin.
It's not. And people spray it on, walk away to do something else, and come back to a pitted surface. Shelf life is indefinite for degreasers. Moderate child hazard. It's a skin and eye irritant. Generic works fine for most cleaning. Purple Power is slightly more aggressive than Simple Green if you're dealing with heavy grease.
Now we get to rust. This is where the terminology tricks people.
Rust converter and rust remover are completely different things, and the names don't help. Rust converter is tannic acid based. It reacts with iron oxide, rust, and converts it to iron tannate, which is a stable black coating. It's a primer, not a finish. You apply it, the rust turns black, and then you must paint over it. If you leave it without a top coat, it provides no protection. Shelf life is short, about 2 years, and once opened, even less. Low child hazard. Rust remover dissolves rust entirely. Phosphoric acid is the most common. It leaves a phosphate coating that's actually good for paint adhesion. Oxalic acid is gentler and used more for stain removal. There's also evaporust, which uses chelation. It binds to iron oxide molecules and pulls them off the surface without attacking the base metal. That's the safest option for delicate parts. Rust remover damages skin and eyes. Wear gloves. Shelf life indefinite. Redundant with rust converter if your goal is to paint over the area. The converter is faster because you don't have to remove all the rust first, just the loose scale.
For a rusty car panel you're going to paint, converter. For a rusty tool you want back to bare metal, remover.
Corn, zinc sprays, and galvanizing sprays. These sound like the same thing. They almost are. Zinc spray, cold galvanizing compound, is 93% or more zinc by weight in the dry film. It provides cathodic protection. The zinc sacrifices itself to protect the steel underneath, exactly like hot dip galvanizing but applied from a can. You use it on welding repairs, scratched galvanized surfaces, any exposed steel that needs corrosion protection. Lower zinc content, around 80%, with more binder for a smoother finish. It's essentially a cosmetic version. For actual corrosion protection, zinc spray is superior. For appearance, galvanizing spray. They're redundant for most practical purposes. Buy the zinc spray and you're covered. Shelf life about 3 years. Flammable in aerosol form. Moderate child hazard. Generic zinc spray works for touch-up. Name brand for structural applications where you need guaranteed zinc loading.
Adhesive removers and label removers. Daniel specifically asked about redundancy here.
Label remover is adhesive remover in a different bottle with a different nozzle. That's it. The active ingredients are either citrus-based, D-limonene from orange peels, or heptane-based. Citrus is safer, smells nice, works on most adhesives, and won't damage plastics. Heptane is more aggressive, works faster, but damages plastics and is highly flammable. For 95% of jobs, citrus adhesive remover works fine. Buy one bottle and a rag. You don't need a separate label remover.
That's the kind of marketing nonsense that fills the shelf.
It's egregious. They're counting on people not reading the ingredients label. Shelf life about 5 years for both. Citrus is not flammable, apartment safe. Heptane is a fire hazard. Generic citrus remover works perfectly.
These seem straightforward, but you flagged something.
Air dusters are compressed gas, usually difluoroethane, sometimes tetrafluoroethane. They're for blowing dust out of electronics and keyboards. Two things people don't know. First, if you hold the can upside down or at a sharp angle, liquid propellant comes out instead of gas. That liquid is cold enough to freeze components and crack circuit boards. Second, difluoroethane has a global warming potential 124 times that of carbon dioxide. Every can you empty is a meaningful climate impact, and it's flammable. People have started fires using air dusters near pilot lights.
The safety concern for kids.
It's a real problem, and it can cause sudden cardiac arrest. Keep these where children can't access them. Shelf life is indefinite until the can empties. Generic works fine. It's all the same gas.
Last one. Protective waxes.
Carnauba, or synthetic wax, for painted surfaces and tools. It creates a moisture barrier and provides UV protection. For tool tables, table saws, jointers, planers, paste wax prevents rust and makes wood slide smoothly. The critical number, Carnauba wax, melts at 85 degrees Celsius, 185 Fahrenheit. That means you cannot use it in an engine bay or anywhere near exhaust components. It'll melt and run off. For high temperature protection, you need a synthetic sealant. Shelf life about 3 years. Low child hazard. Generic paste wax works fine for tools. For automotive paint, name brand synthetics last longer.
We've gone through all 21. Before we collapse this into a real inventory, let's talk apartment storage, because that's the constraint Daniel's dealing with.
The rule in most jurisdictions is no more than 5 liters of flammable liquids total in a residential unit. That's cumulative, all your spray cans, solvents, and fuels combined. Store them in a metal cabinet, not a plastic shelf, and keep that cabinet away from heat sources. Water heaters, furnaces, direct sunlight. Never store chlorinated brake cleaner indoors. The vapor is heavier than air and will pool in low spots. And label everything with the date you bought it, because shelf life matters.
Shelf life is the silent inventory killer. You buy a product for one job, use 10% of it, and it sits there for 6 years until it's useless.
The shortest shelf lives in this list. Rust converter, 2 years. Protective wax, 3 years. White lithium grease, 3 to 5 years before separation. Zinc spray, 3 years. Buy small quantities of those. The indefinite shelf life products. Isopropyl alcohol, degreaser, anti-seize, cutting oil. Buy those in larger sizes because you'll use them and they won't go bad.
Let's build the shelf. 10 products that cover 95% of jobs.
Penetrating oil. PB Blaster for serious rust. Generic for light duty. PTFE lubricant, super lube or equivalent. This replaces general purpose lubricant for almost everything indoors. Silicone lubricant. Only if you work with rubber seals and window tracks. Bearing grease. One tub of NLGI No. 2 lithium complex. Anti-seize. Copper-based for general use. Nickel-based if you work with stainless. Contact cleaner. Deoxy-T for oxidation. Generic for basic cleaning. Isopropyl alcohol 99%. Generic. Degreaser. Simple green or purple power. Just watch the aluminum. Rust converter. Small bottle. Use it fast. Protective wax. Paste wax for tools. Synthetic for automotive.
That's 10. 11 if you count silicone separately, and honestly, most people can skip it.
The redundancy map is where the savings are. General purpose lubricant is redundant with PTFE. Label remover is redundant with adhesive remover. Galvanizing spray is redundant with zinc spray. Brake cleaner is redundant with degreaser for everything except actual brake work. And WD-40, the thing everyone has, is not a lubricant. It's a penetrant and water displacer that you should only reach for when a bolt is stuck or you need to dry out a distributor cap.
Generic versus name brand. Where do you actually need to spend money?
Penetrating oil, PB Blaster, is measurably better. Contact cleaner, Deoxide T for oxidation removal, the chemistry is patented. Bearing grease, Mobil 1 or Shell for anything spinning fast or running hot. Everything else, the generic performs within 5 to 10% of the name brand, and for home and hobby use, that's indistinguishable.
The apartment storage bottom line, metal cabinet, under 5 liters total flammables, no chlorinated solvents indoors, date everything, and keep the air duster away from the kids.
Also, if you're in California or a state that's adopted CRB rules, check your brake cleaner. If it's chlorinated, it's illegal to sell there, and you probably shouldn't be breathing it anyway.
The challenge to listeners, go look at your chemical shelf this weekend. How many of those 21 cans are actually doing unique work? How many are just the same solvents in different bottles? And how many expired 3 years ago?
The money-back guarantee, if you audit your shelf and find three products that are functionally identical, you're not unusual. You're the target market for an industry that thrives on confusion.
Before we close, one open question. As VOC regulations tighten and flammable storage becomes more restricted in apartments, are we going to see a shift to water-based lubricants and cleaners? The chemistry is improving. Water-based degreasers are already competitive. Water-based lubricants are still behind, but the pressure is building. Tier 12 is going to cover adhesives and sealants, which is another category, absolutely full of redundancy. So that'll be a natural follow-up.
That's a whole other shelf of half-empty tubes.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the high medieval period, Patagonian quinoa varieties cultivated at elevation produced seed coats with a silica-rich microstructure that, when milled into flour and baked, created bread that audibly crackled at a frequency of approximately 2,000 hertz as it cooled, a property documented by Spanish chroniclers who described the sound as el susurro del grano, the whisper of the grain.
A bread with a frequency response. That's a first.
2 kilohertz whisper. I'm not sure my sourdough has ever whispered anything.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Audit your chemical shelf, replace the redundancies, and for everything else, read the ingredients label. It's usually the same three things. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We're back soon with adhesives.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.